You are Locked On Jets, your daily New York Jets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome back, Locked On Jets podcast, last day of the week. It's Friday, April 5th, 2019, less than 3 weeks till the start of the NFL draft. I'm your host, John B. from GangreneNation.com. Great to have you with us today. We will talk a little bit about the New York Jets. If you enjoy the show, subscribe on iTunes or Spotify, and we'll deliver the show to your device each day. Well, the new uniforms have been unveiled. The Jets, an event last night hosted by the comedian J.B. Smoove, brought out their three new uniforms, a green uniform, a white uniform, and a black uniform. And they were the leaked uniforms. On Wednesday, there was a picture that leaked on the internet, and it claimed, you know, people were claiming that those were the uniforms, and certainly looked a lot like them. So again, three different uniforms, a new helmet, green helmet. Just go back to a green helmet with the word Jets written across. Helmet, the football on the helmet. The logo gets a little bit of an update. It's kind of looks similar to the old one, but it spells out New York Jets in it instead of NY Jets, kind of like a green football. And then the uniforms themselves, they have New York across the front. They have some stripes on the shoulders, the number on front, the name and number on the back. And I do have to say, you know, when I saw that picture on Wednesday, I did not really like it all that much. And then watching it last night, live in person with the players actually wearing them, moving around, I thought they were a little bit better. And, you know, opinions are kind of all over the place on this, which is what you'd expect because, you know, as we talked about yesterday, there's not really right or wrong on this. It's all a matter of your personal opinion. But from what I gather, it kind of seems like most people, the consensus is, I mean, there's some people who absolutely love them. There's some people who absolutely hate them. And then there are people, and I think I fall in this third group where it's not great, not terrible. I think that's kind of where a lot of us fall. And I kind of want to see them, what they look like on the field before I make a final judgment, how they look, you know, when the Jets are playing in a preseason game. That may give me a better feel for this because, like I said, the picture that came out Wednesday, really, I don't think did these uniforms. I don't think they looked very good. Not only that, but the picture that came out Wednesday, the green one was the one I thought was best in the picture. And for whatever reason, like, I really did not like the green one live, but I liked the white one and the black one much better live when the players were modeling them. So, yeah, I won't spend too much time talking about these because this is not really a great venue to talk uniforms. I don't think a podcast, which is just about the spoken word, is really a great venue. So we'll move on. And I don't know if you remember, like, back, oh God, like 20 years ago, Michael Kay, who's now the TV announcer and he has a radio show on ESPN Radio, but he used to call Yankees games on the radio. And back when he called Yankees games on the radio, his signature, his calling card was providing very descriptive summaries of the uniforms the teams were wearing. So that's kind of what I think this podcast would have to turn into if I was going to discuss this any further. And I mean, look, at the end of the day, I mean, I'm just telling you, it's good or bad. It's not really much I can analyze on this, unlike some of the other topics. So what I wanted to talk a little bit about was, this was a mailbag question I did not get to from a few days ago from a listener named Luke. And I thought this was an interesting question, and it kind of got me thinking broadly about where we're heading on the draft. Luke wrote, this is probably going to assume some kind of trade down, but I'm curious as to your thoughts of drafting TJ Hockenson. So I'm starting to get intrigued by the idea. The reports I've read suggest he's a complete tight end. NFL ready, a good blocker, pass catcher, and route runner. Drafting a tight end in the first round wouldn't normally be what I want, but if the reports are accurate, I feel like drafting him could really help out the offensive line as well as giving Darnold another weapon. We've done nothing towards upgrading the tight end position and not enough towards upgrading the offensive line. This pick could help both. Your thoughts? And kind of got me thinking about which direction I think the Jets should go in this NFL draft. And we talked some broad stuff about, you know, my views on why I think trading down would be a good idea. But I wanted to talk a little bit more today about the specific players. And as always, my mind could change. You know, I'll be watching these guys. I'll be studying these guys, everything I can find out about them from now until draft day, until, you know, the Jets get on the clock with the third overall pick. And, you know, as I said, my preference would be to trade down. Now, when I say my preference is for the Jets to trade down, that doesn't mean I just take any trade that's there. There has to be good value. But I feel like the debate on the trade down is kind of, is your first inclination to trade down? If somebody offered you like a fair deal, a deal that you say, you know what, I'm not fleecing them, that's a fair deal, but that I'm not getting ripped off. If you're getting ripped off, then no trade down. But you look at that, you say, like, you know, it's not a huge package, but that's fair. Is your inclination to trade down, or is your inclination to be, you know what, I'm staying at three unless somebody just totally blows me away? Unless somebody just offers me a ridiculous deal that I cannot turn down, you know, an offer I cannot refuse. And that, I think that's really where this debate is. It's not, I think anybody would take a package that's just so overwhelming that it would be impossible to turn down. I think everybody would turn down a package that just stinks. You know, if some team offered, you know, if Washington offered the Jets like a fourth round pick to move up all those, move up over 10 slots, you turn that down. Everybody would turn that down. So I think that ultimately this debate comes down to, it's not about like whether you want to trade down or whether you don't want to trade down. Ultimately, this is a debate of somebody offers you a fair package that's not overwhelming. Not like the package that, like last year, the Jets gave the Colts 3 second-rounders to move three slow from 6 to 3. That was an incredible package for the Colts. Colts could not turn that down. And that was one of those deals that I think is, when you look at how it looks after year one, that's the rare trade that really looks like it's helped both teams. So just because the Jets gave up a bad package doesn't mean they made a bad trade. It looks like the type of deal that, I mean, there are not many deals in the NFL where you look and you say, you know, both teams are really happy with what they got. I think both teams right now, if you ask them, they're really happy with what they got. Colts got those, but it was a, you know, it was a big package the Jets gave up. Now the Jets got something big in return, which is what makes it worth it. I'm not talking about that type of deal. I'm talking about, you know, a deal where you say, you know what, that's pretty fair value. That's reasonable value, but I'm not overwhelmed. Is your inclination to trade up or trade down? I think that's what the debate is. Me personally, I'd look to trade down in that situation because I'd like to see the Jets add some more picks. But, you know, there's another argument to be made there. So I want to look at the two scenarios. I'm going to name some prospects. I'm probably not going to hit on every prospect today, but just some names that come to mind. So in the scenario where the Jets keep the pick, where they cannot work a trade down or they cannot get fair value for the pick. And look, part of this comes down to how far are they moving down. Oakland's there at 4. If Oakland wants to move up to 3, they're going to have to give up a lot less than anybody else, because I'm only moving down one slot. I can still get an elite player. But if I'm staying at 3, I really think the pick has to be one of three guys. It has to be Nick Bosa, it has to be Josh Allen, or it has to be Quinnen Williams. Now, of those three right now, I think Bosa's my guy. I think you talk about, and I think ultimately Allen's number two, Williams is number three, but not a reluctant number three. I'm not going to be upset if you get Quinnen Williams. I think he'd be a good pick. Now, I think what this comes down to, and I've had like a lot of, I went back and forth for a little while on my order. I think Bosa's one and Allen's two because they play the edge. And I think playing the edge is really important. So that's where I come back to this is, if Nick Bosa and Josh Allen and Quinnen Williams are all elite players at their position, if, you know, they're Von Miller and Khalil, the next Von Miller, the next Khalil Mack, and Williams is the next Aaron Donald, it doesn't really matter who you pick. You're very happy with that pick either way. But if those guys aren't elite players, they're just good players, if they're just, then the good edge is worth a lot more than the good defensive tackle, the good interior lineman. I think right now Bosa is my number one guy because I just see, he's more refined. He's got more developed pass rushing moves. He's better against the run. And he's a guy who I think is more versatile from the standpoint that, not so much that you can drop him. Allen's more versatile in the sense you can drop him into coverage, but Bosa is more versatile in the sense of how he rushes the passer. You know, you can slide him inside. You know, if you like a matchup inside against a guard, you can slide him in there. Whereas Allen, I think, is just going to be more of a pure edge guy. So that's probably why I'd go Bosa number one. I think he's, and I'm not sure Bosa's going to be there. I mean, the way these last few years have gone for the Jets, you almost expect Bosa to fall, because Leonard Williams was never supposed to fall. Jamal Adams was never supposed to fall. Sam Darnold was never supposed to fall. So maybe Jets will, Maybe Lightning will strike once again, but I would be surprised. But I think that's Bosa is probably my number one. Injury concerns aside, he's probably my number one guy. Allen's number two, just incredible. You watch him, he dominates. I mean, it's unbelievable. if you ever watch one of the Kentucky games, you probably just saw him. He was always in the backfield. He was always making plays. He does have the cover. I'm impressed by how he covers. I will say this. If I got a pass rusher, I don't want him covering much. I mean, he'll cover when he needs a breather, and I'll put him back in zone coverage. Aside from that, I mean, if I got a pass rusher, I'm not going to drop him into coverage much. But yeah, great athlete. A little work to do in terms of developing, but still a very good player. No complaints here if the Jets draft Josh Allen. In fact, I've done a few mock drafts representing the Jets, various entities that are conducting them. I played the role of Jets GM, and I think everyone so far I've drafted Josh Allen at three, because these mock drafts also did not have trade downs. So, three, I'm perfectly content taking Josh Allen. He'll be the solution off the edge. Now, your third option is Quinnen Williams. And again, if it's the boom scenario, I think you're fine. And if you're talking pure best player available, I think there's a case to be made that Williams is ahead of Allen. But I think that, I'm factoring in everything. I think Williams, just because he's an interior lineman, would probably be third on my list. Now, I think there's a chance he's that type of dominant force inside. I don't know. You can go crazy. I don't want to go crazy with this comparison, but he does remind me of Aaron Donald from this standpoint. And it's not so much stylistically. It's that I remember 5 years ago when Aaron Donald was coming out back in 2014. I just remember watching him and it was just being amazed. Like, it seemed like nobody could block Aaron Donald. And it was to the point where you have to remember the Jets had a lot of defensive linemen at that point who were pretty good interior types. But I remember thinking, man, that guy falls to the Jets. I'm going to just draft him and trade somebody because that guy is so unbelievable. I mean, he's so dominant. And that's kind of what I think of when I watch Quinnen Williams. It's just he stands out because he's always winning his assignment. He's always getting into the backfield in Alabama. And the other thing about Williams is that I feel like there's some untapped potential there, because Alabama, it seemed to me, and I don't from play to play, it's very difficult to tell, especially when you don't have the All-22 film in college. But it seemed to me that Alabama's scheme, and from what I've read, I mean, he was doing some two. He may not have even scratched the surface on how good he is, because he was doing some two gapping. And when you're a two gap lineman, your job is essentially to keep your linebackers clean. Your job is to essentially tie up a couple offensive linemen, not to penetrate. And he was doing some of them, not exclusively, but that's what he was doing. And two gapping is, in case you're not familiar with it, so between each offensive line, between center and guard, between guard and tackle, it's what's known as a gap. So one gap linemen are responsible for just handling one of those gaps. So their job is to essentially plow through one of those gaps. Two gap linemen are responsible for two gaps. So essentially they need to make sure, either side of a center or either side of the guard, anything that goes there is their responsibility. So they can't focus on penetrating, because if you penetrate into one gap, you're leaving one of the other gaps you're responsible for clean. And he was not doing it exclusively, but he was doing it. Nick Saban in Alabama does ask his linemen to do that. So I feel like he may not even his what he did on film may not do him justice. And this is a guy who, could potentially be a very special player. And I know 4 years ago, there was another player named Williams who was also viewed as the best player in the draft, and he's been a little disappointing, Leonard Williams. And I mean, come on, these are two different players. He's not the same player. That's not really the type of thing you can use to knock Quinnen Williams, because you've been disappointed in Leonard Williams. I don't see these are two different players. And by the way, Leonard Williams has been somewhat disappointing, but one thing I have to say is go back and look at that 2015 draft class. And maybe Leonard Williams is not the best player in the class. Todd Gurley probably is, but look at that first round and tell me that there are many players. Tell me who else you'd want, aside from Gurley, tell me who else in that first round you'd definitively say, I want that guy over Leonard. Well, I'm not sure there is that. And you go through the rest of that draft, I mean, outside maybe David Johnson, there are not many players. Like, Leonard Williams was at the top of that draft class. Not like we should be mocking this idea that Williams was an elite talent in that class. Look at the rest of that class compared to Leonard Williams. Pretty good. But I digress. Even if that wasn't the case, Quinnen Williams is a different player, a different guy. So that's a guy, I mean, I think he'd be fine. I'm not going to, heck, they pick him over Allen, I'm not going to, raise all heck. I think it's fine. I think any one of those three is, listen, I'm somebody who my first choice is to trade down. But if they take any one of those three, I don't think it's a bad move at all. We're here Locked On Jets talking about the NFL draft. So we talked about what happens if the Jets stay at three. I think they got to pick one of three guys. Now, if you trade down, and part of it depends on how far you trade down. You know, trading down to six with the Giants is very different from trading down, you know, into the teens with like a team like Washington. But, you know, if you trade down, then there are a lot of other players who are available. I'll name some of them. We won't have time to get to all of them. Hopefully we will have time to talk about a lot of these other possibilities between now and the draft. I mean, a guy I really like is Brian Burns, the edge rusher out of Florida State. Just a guy who seems very technically sound to me. Lots of different moves. You know, I really like him. I think he'd be a tremendous pick. I'm a big fan of his. You have Ed Oliver at Houston, just an incredible athlete. And to me, you know, like you hear about some of these guys, their versatility. Ed Oliver's a defensive tackle, an interior lineman type. You hear a lot about a lot of these guys like Bosa, their versatility. You move them up and down the line. I mean, for me, Ed Oliver is a guy you stick at the three technique, which is, you know, and the technique, the number of the technique depends on where you line up. It's essentially where you are lined up relative to an offensive lineman. So the zero technique is a guy who's lined up directly at the head of the center. And then you move out to guard. You know, one is on the shoulder of the center. And then you move out two, three. The three technique is the outside shoulder of the guard. And the reason you put a guy there is because the center cannot, because you're on the outside shoulder, the center cannot help them. And because the next closest guy is the tackle, if you have an edge guy coming from the same side, then he can't get double team help from the tackle. So essentially you leave a guy one-on-one with a guard. And to me, Ed Oliver is just a guy, you know, if some people think you move him around, maybe, I mean, look, I've been wrong on stuff before, but to me, this is such a great athlete who can just overwhelm so many guards with his athleticism. Put him at the three technique line and one-on-one against the guard. Be a tremendous player. You know, if you move down into the teens, a couple offensive linemen become interesting. Garrett Bradbury, who looks like a tremendous center prospect, you know, truly, truly great. I think he's going to be a really good center in this league. You know, a guy who I really like is Cody Ford out of Oklahoma. Some people project him as a guard. And to me, I mean, I think he could play maybe I'm wrong. I think if worst comes to worst, you if he can't play tackle, you put him at guard. But I mean, I think he's got the feet to play tackle. I think he's just a tremendous player. You know, there are a couple other tackles out there. Jonah Williams, who I'm not sold on him as a. I think he's going to be good somewhere. I'm not sure exactly where he's going to be good, whether it's tackle or guard. But you know, I think to me, right now, you know, a lot of people view left tackle as the only premium position on the offensive line, but I think those days are kind of ending. I think you're seeing more premium pass rushers move to the right side of the offensive formation. I think the days of the left tackle being the only important position are over. To me, it's almost like an offensive line is only as strong as its weakest link. So, I mean, I think any offensive line spot is almost a premium spot these days. I mean, ask the Colts if they're upset about taking a guard at number six last year. I don't think they are. You build a fortress around your quarterback. So that could be a guy. You also have the tackle out of Florida, Juwan Taylor, who I think he's got a lot of upside, but it's like I watch him one game and I'm really impressed. I watch him another game, I'm like not impressed. I think the guy's bad. I mean, there was a game he played in Kentucky, and when he was up one-on-one against Josh Allen, I don't think Allen really got anything off him. And then I watched some other games, and he looked much less impressive, so I think he's more of a developmental guy. But you brought in what you hope is a good offensive line coach in Frank Pollock, so maybe that's a guy you look to. So, you know, there are guys I'd look to. I'll tell you some of the guys I would avoid. And those are not the only guys I'd look at on a trade down. Those are just some of the first people who pop into my mind. You know, the people I'd kind of like to avoid. Rashawn Gary is a guy I've talked about a little bit. What bugs me about it is just no production. And I look at him, and I don't see great edge moves. I don't see the guy as a great pass rusher off the edge. I mean, I don't see he did great at the combine, but you know, he didn't do it on the field. And I almost feel like you look at his size, you look at his bend, lack of bend, and it's like I feel like he was almost miscast as an edge guy. I think he might be a better guy to kick inside of the three technique, or maybe as like a 3-4 defensive end, you know, a 5 technique or something like that. With his size, but the thing is, like, that's a projection, and I don't like making an early first round pick on a guy who's a total projection, so I don't love that guy. Another guy I would not love to see the Jets draft would be DK Metcalf. Again, not a great track record of production. You know, there are some people who are concerned about his agility. He did great in some aspects of the combine, but the agility drills, he was like, you couldn't believe how bad he was. Like, he was like bad offensive linemen get bad in some of those agility drills in the combine. Like, unathletic offensive linemen put up some of the agility numbers he put up. That doesn't bug me so much because, I mean, this is a guy you're going to stick on the outside. This is not a guy who's going to be running a lot of routes that require quick breaks. You know, he's not going to be in the slot running option routes. So I don't, the agility doesn't bother me. He's got speed. He's got playmaking ability with the ball in his hands. But so you're going to, I mean, you can limit his route. Look, a guy with his physical tools, you don't need to run a ton of different routes. You're not trying to deceive anybody. You're going to let his physical tools take over. And the big thing is, if you can get deep, if you can A, get deep, and B, be explosive with the ball in your hands, you have a shot in the NFL. Because if they play you tight, you can run past them and get deep. If they play, give you a cushion because they're afraid they're getting deep, you just throw a little route and you make plays with the balls and you make plays with the ball in your hands. So he's got a shot. I mean, my issue is just, again, there's a lot of projection going on with him. And also, it's a really good receiver class. So I go back to that is, I mean, I can get a guy who's, I can get somebody who can get a premium player in another position in round one. And then maybe round three, I can get a guy who's maybe not as good, but close enough that, you know, the full package makes sense. Another guy I think you avoid is Devin White just because of the position. Nothing against Devin White, the kid out of LSU, the linebacker, but I mean, you just gave a record contract out of the linebacker position and you have Avery Williamson, so I just don't think Devin White would see the field year one. But that brings me to, you know, to Hockenson, which was the Luke's original question. And I guess this is my roundabout way, is I'm trying to figure out where I'd put him. And to be honest with you, I'm kind of leaning closer to no than I am yes on Hockenson for a couple reasons. And, you know, it's not about him. He is a wonderful prospect. I mean, he's a complete tight end prospect. You know, there are two Iowa tight ends who are going to go, or who are projected as first rounders this year. And one is Fant. And I've seen some projections where Fant goes ahead of Hockenson, and I, for the life of me, can't figure that one out because Fant is, you know, Hockenson's a complete tight end. Fant is really a big wide receiver. And that's not, I'm not saying that as a pejorative against Fant. Like, that's in today's NFL, a tight end who's a big wide receiver is plenty valuable, but Hockenson, he does it all. He blocks, he can run around. I mean, he's a good receiver. I mean, he has a chance to be a very special tight end. And I think that a game-breaking tight end, a guy who creates mismatches like that, is very valuable and could conceivably be a first-round pick. But my thing is just, like, I look at the recent history of first-rounders, and first of all, like, how many tight ends really are game-changers on that level? I mean, Gronk was. He's gone now. Kelsey is. Is anybody else? Maybe Ertz. So, I mean, there aren't really a lot of great tight ends. You know, there really are not that many tight ends who move the needle like that. So Hockenson could be, but I'd be a little worried about, for the same, you know, same concept as when we talk about the edge guys versus the interior lineman. A great interior lineman probably has the value of an edge guy, but a good interior lineman versus good edge guy is more valuable. That's tight end, the same position, same thing's kind of true. A great tight end is a premium player on offense, but a good tight end, I don't know that it really moves the needle all that much. And the other thing is, I mean, there just are not that many tight ends who go in the first round of the draft. So, I mean, even if you're talking about a guy who, I guess what it comes down to is he could be special, but I'm not 100% he's going to be special. If he is special, he's worth the first round pick. But if he's not, then it's kind of not a great pick because you could get a good tight end in the second, third rounds. And most of them do go in the second and third round. So it's almost like that's what worries me about the pick, is that you could talk me into it. Because, look, I love the idea of adding a tight end to help Sam out and pairing with Herndon, because then, boy, you could create a big problem for the team. But it concerns me because the guy's either going to be special or it's going to be a pick that's not that great, because you could probably find, if he's not special, if he's just okay, he's a guy you could probably find later on in the draft. You probably find a comparable player later on in the draft. So I'm always a little worried when there's a pick and I say that guy has to be special. Like Josh Allen, he doesn't have to be. He could be special, and if he is, that's fantastic. But even if he's just good, you're pretty going to be satisfied with that pick at three. So Hockenson, I could buy into it if they, you know, traded down. You could talk me into it, but it probably would not be the first area I'd go. That's all for our show today. Thanks for listening. This has been the Locked On Jets podcast. It's part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Hope you have a great weekend, everybody. We'll be back again next week. Talk more Jets.